Welcome to Tom Papa's Come to Papa. Everybody, welcome to another edition of Come to Papa, your favorite podcast among all the other podcasts. Look at us go. A bonus live one yesterday, back in action with Paul today. Wow, we are really dialing it in.
You are? Are you sure?
I couldn't say dialing, but I feel like at least we're...
Have you done any interviews yet?
Interviews for the book?
Yes.
A couple little ones. I'm trying to... I got a thing about my Colbert pre-interview.
Mm-hmm.
That's Does that good. Count?
Well, no, I was just wondering if you're in press mode.
Not yet, but it's all ramping up. It's all starting. The book, as you know, comes out June 5th. Very exciting. The first big event is May 31st in New York City at Union Square, Barnes & Noble, where I will be sitting with the great Colin Quinn.
Oh, nice.
Who will be moderating and asking me obnoxious questions, I'm sure. And then we'll sign books and do all that kind of stuff on May 31st. Then we head off to the Javits Center on June 1st for another big book event. Then the book comes out. June 5th, where I'm going to be doing a free event at the Colin one is free too. All these are free. Village Underground Unmasked with Ron Bennington. That's the day that the book comes out. And then on June 6th, a live online Facebook signing. So if you are not in New York or L.A. or Ridgewood, New Jersey on the 7th or in Chicago or Portland or Phoenix or Salt Lake City or Washington, D.C., you can go online on this live event on the 6th of June on Facebook Live. I will be posting the link and stuff. It's on my Facebook now, I believe. And you will be able to interact like we do on Facebook Live, and you can say, hey, I just bought your book. I would like it signed. My name is Kelly, and I will sign it right there, and these people in hazmat suits will take the book from me, put it in an airlock container, and shoot it to your house.
Wow.
Very exciting. So, yeah, there's a lot going on, but it really all starts kicking off on the 31st, which is next week already. God.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
It's a... Well, I just want to say, Tom, you know, the reason that Steve Martin... became an author and acted in movies was that you don't have to keep going to all these places. Your book and your movie go to all these places, but you seem to be you're going to all these places as well.
It's my first book. I'm excited. I want to see the people. I'm going to Portland and Salt Lake City, and I'll be sitting there in Phoenix. And here you go. You want to check it out?
Yeah, cool.
Just came in the mail yesterday. Here you go.
Nice. The
first copy.
Hardcover.
A real live book. It's so exciting. How Your Dad Stole My Rake and Other Family Dilemmas. Perfect for Father's Day.
You even have the proper use of your on the front.
Oh, imagine. They did make an error on it. They read the, who are the quotes by?
Seinfeld, Jim Gaffigan, Jane Lynch.
And they left off Soderbergh.
By oh,
mistake.
Really?
He wrote a great one. Hopefully we'll sell enough where we get to do the reprint and he will be on that one. But man, oh man, I'm a little upset by that because his was so funny and so good.
Did they just not have room? It looks like they...
No, Stephen got it in a little later and it just... it was a didn't get there in time kind of a thing. It did get there in time, but somebody made an error. Not a big deal. Except for Steven. I would like Steven to have been on there. He was so nice to write this great thing.
Yeah, if I wrote one, I would probably be mad
yeah,
if it wasn't in there.
No, I don't want him to be mad.
Have you ever done that where you like wrote something for something, you got it in, and like, oh yeah, we didn't end up using
it. We didn't use it. Ugh, terrible. Terrible.
I just wasted my life.
Yeah. So it's very exciting, and a lot of these are free. Anything, go to tompapa.com. It's all listed there. But if you go to any of them, it will be free. Any book events are free. And then there's also stand-up / book events. In Phoenix, it's stand-up live. In Washington, D.C., at the Improv, Salt Lake City, Portland.
Yeah, I'll be with you in Phoenix, but you're going to all those places like for a day before that.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy schedule. I don't want to complain. I don't want to get into my travel schedules. I'll do that online as I'm doing it. When I'm leaving at 4 a.m. and taking the red eye to get to Colbert, I'll complain like a little baby then.
Well, since Seinfeld gave you 2 quotes, could you ask for his plane for a couple of those?
Ooh, that would be delightful.
Just for that 3-day stretch, can you look into that? I see all those. I'm serious. I see all these ads now for like private plane charter stuff. I would say I need Salt Lake to Portland to Phoenix.
You know what that costs?
I'm seriously...
$25,000.
But how come to, like, Vegas, it's, like, it's not that much?
Well, they have a new plane service to Vegas called Jet Suite or something.
Yeah, they have it from...
It's a quasi-private. It's
right.
20 people entering around the airport and getting into these little jets and going. I told you I was on it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, on my way back from this corporate gig in Vegas, that's where it was. I couldn't get a seat assignment on JetBlue. I'm like, why don't I have a seat assignment? And then they said, no, you're flying Jet Suite.
Oh.
Booked through JetBlue. And it was I never found out what it costs. It would be an interesting thing to know.
Yeah, there's one, it was, I think, Toronto to New York. It was called one of those charter things, and... it wasn't that much money, but you know who should ask is, didn't you do something with Brewer not too long ago?
Yes.
I heard him tell a story once where he was like, he did a gig like in Montreal or Toronto or something, and he was just like, oh, I don't want to wait until tomorrow, and I was going to see about getting like a private plane back to New York, and he did it like that night.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and it was like... not enough that he didn't make any money on the trip, but I'm always curious, like, if it's within...
a wash.
If it's less than... I mean, Salt Lake to Portland has got to be an hour and a half, it's not long.
Right.
So I wonder if it's just flight time is the price, you know what I mean? Just tell the publisher, like, hey...
Yeah, get me there.
Yeah, that would be pretty cool. The Papa, you could do the temporary wrap on the plane and just put Your Dad Stole My Rake on the side.
You've got to remember, Paul, we're selling a book. I was thinking about that yesterday. It's like the hard part about selling a book is that you've got to convince people to read.
Right.
Like a movie, there's millions and millions of dollars behind that because everybody still goes to the movies.
Well, what I want you to do is people, because this is what I do. If there's a book that I read that I really like, I always buy the audiobook. Mm-hmm. And I feel like everyone should make a pledge to you to do that. If they enjoy your book, also buy the audiobook.
Yeah, or just go straight up. There was a guy on Facebook Live last night. 11-11, make a wish. There was a guy on Facebook Live last night that said, I'm lazy, I'm buying the audiobook. I don't want to read. And I totally got it. I said, look, that's why I went into a booth for 9 hours.
Yeah.
And read the thing out loud to you like a little baby, like a daddy reading to his child. But pretty exciting. Look at you. You're sitting next to the book. We've been talking about that for such a long time. Remember when there was just like 10 pages?
Yeah.
Now it actually has a cover and a goofy picture on it and everything.
And Seinfeld's on the front. But you don't even have to worry about your face or your chin or anything because it's being covered by your shirt.
Yeah, now I just have to worry about my eyes.
I really feel like that's what, when you get older, that's the only thing you look at is like, how does my chin look? Does my does it look fat?
Yeah, you just want to look up with your chin up directly at people from now on.
And you can't believe that there's a director or a photographer that wouldn't know to not take that picture when you're...
Yeah.
when he's below you or you're looking.
The great Steve Agee takes photos, amazing photos.
Oh, right, yeah.
He's a great comedian, but he's more than anything, I think. He's just an amazing photographer. And he took some shots of me the other night at Largo when I was performing with Jeff Garlin. And in the little room, this great room. And man, he just takes these great shots. I'm going to post it on the Instagrams just so you can see. I mean, he'll never turn in a picture with you with 17 chins.
Well, he's very conscious of that too, I think.
You think so? Because he's gigantic.
I think he's any type of size thing. Yeah, he's a gigantic man. And I'm sure he's worried about looking and posing in all these pictures, especially when he's with, like, a tiny woman, you know?
I love the big guys with the little tiny women. That always seems like just a fun relationship. Everybody wins. You get someone small, she gets someone big. It's just like this fun little comedy team.
He can reach things for you. That's all you need.
Yeah. It's amazing. What'd you do last night? Did you watch? Oh, no. Two nights ago was your Boston Celtics. I know you're on pins and needles every... did they play again tonight?
I think it's tomorrow. They go back to Boston now. They did not play well on the road. They never have. They're a young team. And, yeah, they did not show up. So there's a lot of... I mean, here's the thing.
Why does that happen?
They're so young. I mean... Kyrie Irving's 25, and he's the oldest guy on the team, and he's the one that's out for the season. They have two guys.
But they've been out for a long time. I mean,
he hasn't been out that long, but Gordon Hayward, the all-star that they spent all their money on, dislocated his ankle in that gruesome injury the first game of the season against Cleveland.
Right.
So they've had... Basically, they're two best players and two of the best players in the league out the entire, you know, most of the season. So they have all these, like, young players. And I went to...
So you think that they need a legend, like a veteran to get them through the playoffs kind of thing?
No, they do. I mean, that's why they're going to be so much better next year. But it's amazing they've kind of done, like, you know, they've won two playoff series already and... And nobody expected them to win either one. So they're kind of on house money now. It's almost because they played so well now, everyone was expecting them, oh, they're going to beat LeBron. I was like, well, they're not supposed to. You know, they're so young.
But
they do have a chance.
They
have
a chance, right?
They were ahead 2-0. So, but in basketball, especially, home city advantage is kind of a big deal. So they do have. Had the home court advantage if it goes seven games. Yeah,
they're not in Cleveland anymore. I mean, they'll come back, but
yeah, they go one Boston. I think it goes 1-1-1, maybe something like that. But yeah, game seven is in Boston. So if it goes that far, but we'll see. They're young, and if they respond, and you know,
it's kind of mind-boggling still. Throughout all this time, it's still mind-boggling that they're almost playing against one person.
Right.
That LeBron, and you know I don't watch that much, but I watched the other night, is just, it's like watching like when you were in high school and there was like one kid that was going to obviously go to the NFL.
Yeah, yeah.
Playing against all the other normal high school kids.
Right.
It was just so much more gigantic and powerful than everybody else.
Yeah.
That's watching LeBron in a professional game is like that.
Right. Yeah, he's almost like Shaq, like Shaquille at his size and weight to move the way he did is like a freak of nature, and LeBron's the same thing. He's 6 foot eight, 260 pounds.
Yeah, of pure muscle, not like a lumbering guy.
Yeah.
He moves like a guard.
He's always been in shape. It's...
Yeah.
And he always, you know, my only thing is, like, he never seemed to play with, like, better people. So he's always kind of just played his own way, and he's never had a great coach. Like,
well, Miami he had great people, right?
Not really. I mean, they had Dwayne Wade, yeah. But he was kind of like a little off, I guess not a little past his prime, but, like, you know, he won.
And your buddy from the Celtics was there.
Which one? Oh, Ray Allen came in later on.
Yeah,
they would bring in, but they were kind of like specialty players. Like,
right.
I'm trying to think, like, the best analogy is, like, you know, let's say Jordan was the same way. Uh-huh. Like, he can score and do anything, and he always wants to handle the ball. But let's say he wants somebody that makes three-pointers. So there's Steve Kerr. Like,
right.
LeBron has Kyle Korver, and he just has, and there's a big guy who just rebounds and passes the ball back to him. There's right. there's no guys that, like, score. That's why Kyrie left, because
right.
he didn't want to be just one of those role players.
So stupid.
And that's why Golden State is so great, because they have three guys like that that can just
yeah.
score like crazy.
Can we talk about Steph Curry's Billy Goat beard? Steph Curry, as you know, is the amazing three-point guard from the Warriors. And he was always just a young, bright-faced... Little bright spot.
Yeah, he
always
looks
had a little attitude. There's a little anger underneath him at all times. Anyway, but he just looked like this like the face that you want on the box of Wheaties. And now he's got this scraggly, kind of red, kind of brown, lower chin, unkempt beard. It's kind of like when Tiger went through his troubles and all of a sudden was rocking that weird goatee and that weird. All of a sudden. It's a sign that something's wrong when your facial hair goes crazy.
Well,
is there something wrong with Curry?
No, I think he's just, you know, he still looks like he's about 15. So they all feel the need to, like, have some kind of, it's just like baseball. They all grow some kind of dumb beard, or in basketball especially, there's been, like, a whole renaissance of, like, horrible haircuts and bad tattoos.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, there's a guy in the Celtics that wore two different sneakers, like, two different colors.
Right.
So I think there's this need to, like, stand out somehow.
Stand out, yeah. It's not a good way to stand out, though. He looks gross.
No, they all look like they can't grow those beards.
Well,
like,
what's his name on Houston has a, you know... The beard.
Right, right.
What's his name?
Harden, James Harden.
James Harden. He is the beard.
Right, right.
But he, like, you could tell, he's clipping it. He's keeping it kind of tight.
Yeah.
I just shaved before you got here because I was, I'm like, I'm traveling. I'm tired. Screw it. I'm not shaving. And then after 2 days, I'm like, I got to get this off my face.
But see, it looks like it's already growing in.
What? Because I skip spots.
No.
I did shave without my glasses, which is a total blind person's pursuit. I literally have to do it by feel. Like, oh, I missed a spot because I can hardly see in my own face.
Oh, I meant to ask you this. So I'm going to the eye doctor today.
You are?
And they asked me if I want the contact exam.
Right.
And the only time I ever wore contacts was... Even when I was young,
yeah,
when I was working at the TV station, to read the prompter that far away, I needed contacts.
Right.
And so now I'm glasses guy on stage.
Aha, uh-huh, right.
So do I ever go back to contacts ever? Do you get the... What do you do?
Well...
Because you're a glasses person. Are you...
Would I go contacts? You know, it's kind of an interesting question.
Are you able?
I'm not able to.
This is Bella breathing, by the way.
Bella just got back from her walk. She'll say hello, and then she's going to pass out.
She is getting, like, doubling in size every time I see her.
She just went on her walk, which is miles. Come here, Bella.
She's got to be, like, 100. How much does she weigh now?
She was 75 at her last weigh-in.
She's way more than that.
It's a lot of dog. You think she's way more than that?
Yeah, I know it's not polite to say that about a lady. You are definitely packing on some pounds.
She is.
She spins around and hits you with that butt, and it's like there's some girth there.
I want to go. I want to get her to the beach. But
yeah,
I want to see her run on the beach. She'd be so happy. So anyway, my So, you know, because I have a little scar on my eye, my doctor told me he didn't want to mess with it by putting something right on it, like putting a contact lens on it.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't want it to ever get worse. So he, but the last time he was kind of a little more open to the idea. I don't know. Here's kind of a show business eyeball thing. I've posted so many pictures with me on Instagram with these glasses, like when I do those half shots.
Mm-hmm.
People have done illustrations of me with my glasses for the new Bread show. They always want me with my glasses. It's becoming a little bit of a, this is my look kind of a thing, which is such a, you know, show busy, weird thing to say. That if I were to just whip them off and go to, I feel like I've changed my look several times, like with my specials and things. And it's like Tom Wolfe just died, the great author Tom Wolfe.
Okay.
He was known for wearing his white suit all the time.
Okay.
He always wore this three piece, all white suit, white spats, and white hat at times, and a pocket watch. There is something to being a personality that looks exactly, that looks consistent,
mm-hmm.
that looks the same. I've never adhered to it. I've kind of changed through the years.
Yeah.
If you were to see like my first thing to my chubbier guy with glasses thing, it looks like a different guy. This is a long way of saying, I don't know if I'd go contacts right now. I think I'm just going to rock the glasses for a long time.
So, that being said, if there was a game show that you didn't want to be recognized on,
I would take them off. Yeah, and we were talking with our friend Emily, what was her last name at the...
Van Dyke.
Emily Van Dyke was our MC in San Francisco this weekend. By the way, thank you all for coming out in San Francisco. A lot of people showed up to those shows at Cobb's Comedy. We go to San Francisco once a year. It is literally one of the most fun weekends we have, I think.
Yeah, that was like, it felt like a full week. I mean, I went up there, I did a show at the Throckmorton Theater on Tuesday, and then I went to the baseball game on Wednesday.
So lucky.
So that was like a, I know people are laughing, that feels like a full week to me, but because I went to a baseball game. But yeah, and then we did five shows at the end, and then
it was fun, and we had a lot of fans of the podcast, and it was just great that everybody came out. We totally
people got upset that I made fun of San Francisco pizza, which you wouldn't think.
Yeah, online, and the guy from the place that we ate at.
I know, isn't that funny?
Yeah, I don't want to.
Well, you already trashed him on the last episode that you made the mistake.
But I didn't say where we went, did I?
I think you might have. Well, maybe not.
I don't think I named
it. That is funny, though.
But it is a renowned pizza place. And the dough was limp. It was not good. And you made a crack on stage about how they don't have pizza and about the water. Hey, Bella. And the guy from that restaurant said quickly online, don't, you know, hey, come over to us because we have the great one. And I wanted to, but because I didn't want to be mean, I wanted to say, we were there. That's the pizza we were talking about. We did order the wrong way. We should have gotten that straight up American pepperoni. And we got,
That was their award winning Italian pizza, margarita.
It's not our fault. They blew it.
Well, the thing is, we both have in mind, and keep in mind, too, that the first show, when I just did that joke as a riff, it killed, because I just said, you know, these cities try to be something they're not. Like, you don't have to act like you like pizza here. You don't. There's so many other things.
Yeah, you weren't wrong.
And then everyone got mad, and because I just said New York doesn't brag about their water. They just play to their strengths, you know. Yeah. And then I think it was one guy said, "Oh, we got great pizza." And then I think that Tony's guy must do a search whenever somebody talks about San Francisco and pizza.
Yeah.
And that's why he like chimed in. So I don't know.
Yeah. But anyway, that was a great weekend. San Francisco was tons of fun. And Emily was our MC, and she wore glasses. And it dawned on me the second night, this is like the glasses show.
But that's Seinfeld.
She's in glasses, you're in glasses, I'm in glasses, we're all in glasses. It's like the big glasses
that's
show.
That's Seinfeld in your head, though. That's all it is.
Yeah. Oh, when we did it, yeah, when we went to his house after our show in Long Island.
Yeah, but that was like when you were in New York. When you were in New York, if you wore glasses, like back when you started, you were the nerd act. Like,
yeah,
it was like a noticeable thing. And now people dislike wearing glasses. I mean, every NBA player that does a press conference wears glasses for the press conference
without just, even needing them.
It's like a style thing. So,
well, we really need them. So I don't know. I'm just going to keep rocking the glasses, I think. I mean, but Emily was saying LASIK.
Yeah.
That she might go for LASIK and that her friends can read,
yeah,
can see distance all from LASIK. That is pretty great. That would have to make me swallow my show business goofballness.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe I would even keep the glasses as the fake glasses. I mean, to be able to just see the way I used to see would be amazing. So I'm going to ask that when I go. Why don't you ask that today at your appointment?
Well, I will, because I don't know if my vision is bad enough. Because I do wear glasses. I have worn them a lot for like reading just on the computer and stuff.
Yep, it's all starting.
But I don't have problems with like, you know, just, yeah, I don't know exactly what I am, like if I'm nearsighted or farsighted or anything. I don't know.
Well, that's cool that you're going.
But everybody in my family.
I love going to the eye doctor because there's nothing you can do about it. There's no judgment on you. Like if you go to a regular physical and they tell you, you gained 25 pounds, your cholesterol's high,
yeah,
your blood pressure's off the charts, it's because of your lifestyle and how you acted.
Right.
So you feel bad. Same thing with the dentist. If you go and they're like, God, you don't floss. You're like, I know. The eye doctor is the one place you go and it's like, your eyes are messed up. Well, it's not my fault. You know what I mean?
But I think initially there was a stigma to it. That's why I was talking to my buddy Dan Wojcie, who was a writer for the LA Times. He's covering like the NBA.
Yeah.
And we did the commercial with Chris Paul together a couple years ago, like a Nike commercial. And he, I think he got it done. And we were just talking about like how, you know, like basketball, he can actually see the rim now. And like to play baseball, it's like you just kind of wonder how much better you would have been as a kid if you could have seen.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like,
yes.
I don't know how bad your eyes were when you were a kid.
Of course.
But I mean, everybody in my family had glasses, and I just never even thought about, like, can I really see that well? It was just like, I can see well enough, I guess.
Yeah, you don't know. You have nothing to compare it to.
Yeah.
Wow, that would have been... They're making such strides. And I remember when they started doing the LASIK thing, it was like, I remember people saying, don't get it done.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's, you know, people have messed it up. But now it seems like it's a pretty flawless procedure.
Yeah, people do it all the time. And
I might do it. I'm going to ask my guy. I got to make my appointment when I go back to New York.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like when I got contacts, they're like, you have astigmatism, so you can't even like, get a certain kind of contacts. And it always seems like you have like the one thing that you can't do to fix anything, like you know what I mean? So I don't know what laser would fix my eye.
Yeah.
Or if there's any kind of thing to look at. I'm not sure.
I had a doctor friend of mine who we used to ride motorcycles with, and he said, Tommy, don't let him mess with anything above your neck. That's your big mistake.
Well, that's what I have a couple guys that we know that have gotten what's the thing when you get your male tubes tied?
Vasectomy.
Yeah. We've had I know a couple of people that you know have gotten vasectomies voluntarily.
Yes.
And that to me seems like the most dangerous thing you could ever do is get voluntary surgery on your nether regions.
Why? I mean, so what?
What do you mean, so what? You've never heard that? Like, you shouldn't get voluntary surgery unless it's something like...
Yeah, but that's a thing. Like, you're married and you don't want kids and you don't want to have to use birth control ever again.
I mean, come on.
Why not? It's just, you know, it's they go in there, they snip a little thing and you're out.
I don't think so. One of our friends who's finally making a lot of money now had to cancel a week because the recovery wasn't so well. And now they're saying, like, sometimes you have to get it done, like, twice. I was like, I've never heard of that.
Just go to a good doctor.
I'm just saying.
I would get some voluntary surgery done. I've never had surgery. I have to go for my my poop video soon.
Oh, yeah.
My poop movie.
Is that going to end up on
I can't find the
Facebook
card.
Live?
I had the guy's card. I was supposed to go, and I haven't gone. I'm supposed to go. I don't want to go, but I can't find the business card. I'm going to have to call my doctor and get the referral.
Dr. Jellyfinger.
Yeah, where they knock you out, and they put movie cameras in your thing.
Have you ever done it before?
No. Have you?
Mm-mm.
No, I've never done it. They say it's no big deal. They just knock you out, and then that's whatever. Hey, I just went online and looked up that jet suite thing.
Okay.
The semi-private 20-seat thing. Now, when I went, you don't even go to the airport. Like, you don't go through the security at the airport. You go to, like, a private jet little entranceway.
That seems safe.
Yeah.
For terrorists.
It's worth it not to go. What would you pay? What do you think it would cost for you a one-way ticket from Las Vegas to Burbank Airport?
I would think that...
20 people, no airport.
20 people.
They put you in a little shuttle bus. They take you right out to the jet. There's like 20 people get on the flight.
Yeah, I don't know. 1,000?
Interesting. Interesting.
Is it close?
No.
5?
No.
I'm
talking Southwest numbers.
Oh, okay. So it's lower.
Yeah.
219. Okay, yeah.
Why would you not do that?
Because it's $30 to fly there from LAX.
30 bucks?
Yeah.
No.
It's like $39.
It is?
Yeah.
When I fly Southwest, it's like 200 bucks.
When you go to... But you go to Burbank.
Yeah, to Burbank.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Burbank is more expensive. So I would do that.
You would drop down to LAX and go for like no money.
Oh, yeah.
That's a pretty... For $219, that's less than what I'm paying on Southwest, and you have a private jet, quasi-private jet experience.
Yeah, that is...
I'm not getting paid by these people, but that's pretty darn good.
Yeah, that is awesome. But that's what I mean is, like, so you can't just tell the guy, like, hey, do you mind going to Salt Lake City and Phoenix?
They don't go there.
For this price.
They don't go there.
They don't go there?
Nope.
Okay, so if you
They do Burbank, San Jose, Oakland, Las Vegas.
Oh, okay.
It's very limited. But so maybe these new things will open up other places. But I would like I have to get from Portland to Phoenix.
So a direct flight on 20 different flights today is $44 to Las Vegas.
How much?
$44.
For real?
Yeah.
I've never heard of that in my life.
All of them. American, United, Alaska.
$44.
Yep.
Jeez.
You go at 7 o'clock tonight, Tom.
I've been flying the wrong airport. That's ridiculous. That's less than what it costs to valet your car at the airport in Burbank.
Well, that's why I just went there for the day, and I had a private show that was out in, like, the Inland Empire, so it was kind of like an hour closer to Vegas anyway, so I just drove it. But by the time I drove back, I was like, oh, I should have just flown because it's so much easier.
Wow. Philip Roth died.
Who's that?
One of America's greatest authors.
Really?
Yes.
What did he write?
Portnoy's complaint was his like big one that blew everything up.
Phil Roth. That name is
Philip Roth. American Pastoral.
Mm.
The Human Stain, The Plot Against America. That one was good. That was a twist on history. If Charles Lindbergh had become president and he was a Nazi sympathizer and started dealing with what if America had sided with the Nazis?
Oh, you just like him because he's from New Jersey.
Yeah, he grew up in Newark. He was one of the greatest writers of all time. American writers. And he just passed away at 85. Tom Wolfe just died. Another great writer.
Is his... Tom Wolfe. Is he the one who did... What was his...
Bonfire of the Vanities. A Man in Full. You know the Tom Hanks movie, Bonfire of the Vanities?
Yeah, yeah.
That's what Tom Wolfe wrote.
There's somebody who has a great memoir, though.
Dr. Seuss?
The Something Boy Stories is about him growing up. Is that Tom Wolfe?
The Hardy Boys?
Mm-mm. It's like a autobiography.
Nancy Drew. No?
No, I thought it was Tom Wolfe.
He wrote what?
He didn't write any memoirs. He wrote all novels.
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe it's not him.
I don't think he had a memoir.
Tobias Wolfe, maybe. I know like the real authors, Tom. I know you're just going for these like.
Come on. I think you should. I'm going to read something because you love hearing this kind of stuff. About how people write and how people do things.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of my favorite things is to hear how writers write as an author. this is Philip Roth in 1987. He said, writing isn't hard work. It's a nightmare. Coal mining is hard work. This is a nightmare. There's a tremendous uncertainty that's built into the profession, a sustained level of doubt that supports you in some way. A good doctor isn't in a battle with his work. In most professions, there's a beginning, a middle, and an end. With writing, it's always beginning again. Temperamentally, we need that newness. There is a lot of repetition in the work. In fact, one skill that every writer needs is the ability to sit in the deeply uneventful business. To sit in this deeply uneventful business. Just to be able to sit there. Pretty cool.
Yeah, who was the one that said, when you're writing, you're not living? I think it's Dylan or somebody like that.
Oh, yeah, it sounds like it.
When he finally tried to write.
I'm going to go on just because it's one last paragraph. This is his routine,
okay.
Nuts and bolts of it.
Cool.
My schedule is absolutely my own. Usually I write all day. But if I want to go back to the studio in the evening after dinner, I don't have to sit in the living room because someone else has been alone all day. I don't have to sit there and be entertaining or amusing. I go back out and I work for 2 or 3 more hours. If I wake up at 2 in the morning, this happens rarely, but it sometimes happens, and something has dawned on me. I turn the light on and I write in the bedroom. I have these little yellow things all over the place. I read till all hours if I want to. If I get up at 5 and can't sleep and I want to work, I go out and I go to work. So I work. I'm on call. I'm like a doctor, and it's an emergency room. I am the emergency. So what? You're not married? You never?
Sounds like a real barrel of laughs. That's like what we would be if we couldn't go on stage after we wrote it, the stuff, you know?
You would just keep doing it and never have an outlet.
That's why I am amazed that anything that any of these guys write ends up being good. Doesn't that...
Because they never have...
Well, they're amazing. Even if you're the most amazing writer, how would you even know without getting any feedback other than maybe an editor or maybe you read it to somebody? Like,
yeah, but I think when you've done it long enough, you get a sense of, you know what's... Maybe not whether it's going to be successful, but you know what's good.
That's true, But, you know, we think we know what's good, too, and you go out there and you lay an egg. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I mean, a novel isn't necessarily line by line like that, but, yeah, to even, you know, for Stephen King to almost never be wrong about the instincts of writing so many of these is pretty amazing.
And you can't, I mean, look, you're right. I mean, we are held, but we're also writing for one result. We're writing because you want people to laugh, right? Once in a while, you'll say something meaningful or for some other reason, but 99% of what you're saying is for one reaction from these people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you write a novel, you're looking for a whole myriad of things.
Yeah.
You know, you're trying to say something. You're making a point. You want people to laugh. You want people to cry. You want people just to think. You know, there's a lot of give. That's why I always bristle when I hear that someone's a humorist.
Right.
You know, and these people write all these books as a humorist. It's kind of taking the pressure off of the I'm a comedian.
Yeah.
You know, if you got up on stage as a humorist and people are just like sitting there like not laughing, you just have to remind them every once in a while, it's okay, gang. I'm a humorist.
Right.
You're not supposed to laugh at all of this.
Well, that's why it's so much easier to do a drama, because there's no expectations of, like, you know, they're just taking the whole show in.
Yeah.
You know, like, even that Atlanta show isn't, like, ha-ha funny.
Yeah.
Ever. But it's, you know, it's a cool show, and they build this whole world.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I don't think there's anything harder than trying to get laughs. I mean, if you get a show like Book of Mormon, you know, or like one of these like solid shows that are on Broadway and getting laughs every single night, that is a hard, hard thing to do.
Yeah.
Hard. You know, if you write a play and, I mean, look, it's not easy to have like real impact to create a Angels in America or some kind of show that really like blows your head off by the time you walk out of there as a drama. That is not an easy thing to do. But you could write a drama and have this kind of gray area of like, yeah, it's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good. But if you write a comedy and no one's laughing, no one's ever saying it's kind of good.
Yeah.
people laughed or they didn't and you're out. Same as being a comedian. You laughed, you didn't, and you're out. Yeah, it's a very tricky thing. Yeah. So the great Philip Roth passed away, and I just looked up, he was married twice, separated each time. So he lived alone and was just kept cranking it out. That's a big deal to not have. That's why I get up at 6 and write, or 7 and get up and write, because when my people come back into the home, like around 4 o'clock in the afternoon, writing's pretty much done.
Yeah.
Even if they don't want me to entertain and pay that much attention, dinner's rolling. You got to be kind of on call if somebody says something, you know. It's, and I don't want to ignore them at that time. So
right.
I have to get up and crank it out while I am living like I am alone for a certain amount of time.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, there are so many people in this town. They work really hard to get a nice home, and then they end up having to go to Starbucks to write.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, when the kids were young, I would have to write. I had an office for a little while because everyone's in the house. It wasn't until they went to school that I actually was like, oh, now I have my place back.
Yeah.
But for like 6-8 years they're little kids until both of them were off at school, I would sit outside in my old house. It was a small place, and the office was like in a public space. And I would literally in the winter just put my jacket on. This is before I could afford an office. And I would put my coat on and sit outside at the picnic table and write. Like, it was cold. And I'm sitting there with my little pad and paper in my winter coat because I couldn't be inside because these little people, they don't care what you're doing. You know, writing? No. Pick me up, feed me. It's being in a family is kind of a crazy place to create.
Yeah, I have one friend that I played basketball with in college. That's a he's a horror writer. So he, you know, he posts on Facebook, I think, just for, you know, motivation stuff. Like, he'll check in the morning, but he gets up at, you know, I think 4 a.m. to start writing, and he's a teacher.
Right.
So, like, everyone gets up at, like, 7, so he has, like, 3 hours in the morning to write every day. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, you got to do what you got to do. You got to bang it out, you know. But you like doing stuff late at night because you're single, and you're always getting stuff done, right? You always say, like, late at night you like doing stuff.
Yeah, I can't, like, you know, when most people talk about, like, you know, I have this stuff to do in the morning. I was like, well, I can't even wait till the morning. If I have to do it, why not just do it now? You know what I mean?
Yeah, right, exactly.
Like, if you're like, I got to get up and write this thing, I was like, well, why don't you just do it now so you have to get up early? So that's always been my thing, is just to work on stuff until, you know, you don't have to force it, but then, you know, if you have the time to do it, you should just do it. But
if you can get it done, how is all of your, big list system working?
Well, we're working on it. This is basically the first week of just being in town. And so I did do yoga. I did get organized a little bit. I am going to see a legend tonight.
What? Who are you seeing?
I don't know if you know this man by the name of Paul Simon. He's a personal friend of mine.
What?
Well, he has one more show, I think, but I don't know if you're in town. He did the Hollywood Bowl last night. 26 songs.
Hollywood Bowl last night?
Yeah, he's doing tonight.
It's chilly to be at the Hollywood Bowl right now.
Tom, you sound like such an LA wuss. How cold is it?
There's not even sunshine right now.
It's still in the 70s.
No, it's not. It's like 69.
The New York Tom. Okay. So this
is 61.
I don't think so.
It's what it says on the old phone. 61 degrees. How dare you go out there? Tonight when you go see Paul Simon, it's going to be in the 40s.
You'd be playing baseball in shorts if it was 61 in New Jersey in the 80s.
Well, my blood was different then.
So this is, it's his farewell Homeward Bound tour. So this is the last three. So he plays 2 encores, 26 songs.
Wow.
Starting off America, 50 Ways to Leave Your Lover, Boy in a Bubble, Mother and Child Reunion, Me and Julio, Obvious Child, Diamonds on the Soles of Her Shoes, You
Who's
Can Call
band?
Me Al. Actually, I know one of the guys.
Oh, yeah?
I do, yeah.
Let me guess. He went to your high school.
No.
Woofy-doo.
One of our buddies, Frank Sebastiano, a guy he knows, is like a session guitarist, but he tours with Paul Simon.
Wow.
And
that's exciting.
Yeah, I almost forgot that. That's
is
so
he still
weird.
Married to Edie Brickell?
I think so. She's not on tour. But yeah, he's
what
like...
It is,
that's
what was,
what's...
What was the words?
I'm not aware of too many things. I know it looks like a pee when I sing.
And then what is it? What's the chorus? I'm a dad.
And what you are or what?
Oh, yeah. What you are is what you are is what you are is what.
I feel like there was 10,000 Maniacs fans and there was Edie Brickell fans. Things.
Come on, Eileen.
No, that's Dexy. Well, it was Edie Brickell and what was her group?
Edie Brickell and the Midnight Runners.
The New Bohemians.
Oh, that's right. So she married Paul Simon.
Yes.
But then created music with Steve Martin for a Broadway play last year.
Is that true?
Yeah, the two of them worked together.
I wouldn't trust Steve Martin.
That's that New York Paul Simon... Steve Martin,
well, he's
Edie
in
Brickell,
SNL.
Lauren Michaels hanging at the Hamptons making musicals together.
Crowd.
Right.
Yes. Yeah,
we're not a part of that crowd. Oh, do you want to tell our listeners the bad news that you broke to me as soon as you walked in?
Oh, that your second wife is no longer on the market, Gwyneth Paltrow. And she's lived in L.A. for 4 years. She hasn't done Come to Papa Live. She hasn't. Why didn't she play your wife in a sitcom? What's going on?
I can't talk about it.
I don't know who she's marrying either.
It's too upsetting.
Here's the interesting thing. I heard an interview with her. She was in New York for like doing press stuff, and she was staying with friends in New York. Not even a hotel.
Who was?
Gwyneth Paltrow.
What friends?
They were two dudes, two gay guys. And why don't you do that when you go to New York, Tom? You're too good for to hang out with your friends?
My friends don't have apartments big enough to let me stay in them.
Except for Seinfeld, you probably.
Yeah, my friends don't have guest rooms.
I don't know anybody in New York that has a guest room. The only time you stay in somebody's place in New York is if they're gone, right?
Yeah. I contacted Ari the other day to do some show, and he was like, "But what, do you want to use my apartment?" I was like, that would be great. I do spend a lot of money in hotels when I go to New York.
Yeah. Well, Fitzsimmons, I think, got him kicked out of his other apartment.
How?
I forget. I think it's just because there's like different people in there, but because Greg works on that crashing show in HBO for like, I don't know, a few months at a time. So he like moves there for a few months. So he just stayed at Ari's place when he was like lost in Asia for a few months.
Right.
He like came back and the landlord booted him out
and kicked him out. That's terrible.
Yeah, that is funny that he thought you wanted to use your place. But I did a show last night at the Pasadena Cancer Support Center, which was cool.
Were they a nice crowd?
Amazing. It's like, it's crazy. They have these places all over the country, and it's like people who go, who finish chemo or are going through treatments and stuff like that. And it's just right. like a center to help them find doctors and all that.
Oh,
and
nice.
They do these shows like once a month, and it's like Monday night at 7 in this office building. And you're like, oh, this is like a nightmare for a comedian, but it's like amazing. Yeah, it was so cool.
So, like, who's in the audience exactly?
All, it's usually, there's a lot of older people, but yeah, it's just people that either just finished treatment or they're going through treatment, and they're just kind of, like, in this community and know all the people, and yeah, it's really awesome.
How long did you do?
I did, like, 20, 25 minutes, maybe.
Nice.
Yeah, it's cool. It's something that I wouldn't think that I could... You know, because my whole side of the family is all, like, doctors and nurses.
Yeah.
And that's what, like, creeped me out about hospitals. And I never wanted to be around, like, hospitals or doctors or anything.
Because your family?
Well, yeah. Like, you would go visit my mom at, like, an old folks home. And the guy I was talking to yesterday would be dead. You know?
Right.
He's like, oh, where's Mr. Johnson? Oh, he's not here anymore. I was like, oh, so people just disappear at hospitals?
Yeah.
So that
As
was
a kid,
like,
it's a hospital's a weird place. I one time was going to visit somebody. I was like, I don't know, a teenager. Mm-hmm. And I got off on the wrong floor. I got off in the cancer ward. Like it was a real rough hallway.
Mm-hmm.
And that messed me up for a good while.
Yeah,
because you don't expect it. You don't know. You've never been educated to this stuff. If you didn't have someone in your family that's gone through it, it's just like glee.
Yeah.
But, you know, as an adult, it's pretty, you know.
Well, you're a parent. You've seen a lot of crazy stuff with your, and had to do a lot of things for your kids that, like, kind of give you more humanity than, like, being uncomfortable, I guess. I mean, for me.
Yeah, as a child. Yeah, as a kid, it's just all dumped on you.
Yeah, for me, it wasn't like I don't want to be around this. It was like, I don't know how do I talk to somebody who's going through chemo or make them laugh or something? And I kind of like, you know, I didn't want to like insult them, but then you see how much it means to them and that they are a great audience. And it's like, oh, okay, this is like, these shows mean more to me than like doing,
yeah,
making like hipsters at the improv laugh. You know what I mean?
100%.
Because these people actually.
And the only way to really insult them is to censor yourself and not talk to them the way you would talk to anyone else.
Right. The one thing is like you don't, you know, you don't want like their whole lives are like dealing with cancer. So like you're the break. So you don't necessarily want to like talk about anything that's going on.
Do 50 minutes on that.
Yeah.
Do you make any comment on it though?
I don't think I did last night. But it was funny because, you know, they want more places to do this because it's so good for the patients.
Yeah.
And so there was a lady that was like taking pictures from the side.
Uh-huh.
But she had like a tripod and she didn't know how like the camera worked.
Right.
So she's just like standing there with like the zoom lens, like right here, like going through like the office window. And I'm like, are you sure you're like a photographer? And you're not like scoping out the bank over there? Are you zooming in on the guy opening the safe? Like I was just kind of making fun of the stuff going on. But
where was this?
In Pasadena.
Okay.
And there's one in Westlake Village that I've done before. There's one in Beverly Hills that I've done before.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah, they're pretty cool.
That's very cool.
And the people are very, like, you know, very thankful. You know, like, sometimes you'll do shows and somebody like, oh, I really needed that today. And you can kind of tell, like, oh, they meant it. Like, that's every person in there is like that. So it's pretty cool.
Just you or another comedian?
They usually have, like, three. There's a guy, Steve Simone, from like a comedy store guy that
I know him.
Was there. It's always a lot of fun.
That's like very cool.
Yeah. So
nice work, Paulie.
And then
come back to you in karma.
Yeah, so I do charity shows and I'm going to Iraq to perform for the troops, so I'm just a really good person, I would say.
You are. And that is going to come back to you tenfold. Have you seen Solo?
No. When does it come out?
It opens this week. My friend Roland over at SiriusXM saw it because he got to go to a screening, I guess.
Oh, right.
And he said that it's amazing. He said it's amazing.
Yeah, I do want to see it. Oh, wait. I was going to ask you real quick. So, Paul Simon, were you a fan of him growing up? Or is it just like
big time.
Yes.
Big time fan.
So this show, because that's the thing, is you're very careful of, you know, like I love Elvis Costello, but I do kind of have to check the set list to see, like, is he doing, like, some country western thing? Is he doing whatever? But if it's something that I really want to see. So this is his final tour, 27 songs, but these are just the two encores are, so he plays 18 songs up to this point. The first encore is Kodachrome, Still Crazy After All These Years, and Mrs. Robinson.
God, those are giant songs.
And then comes out for another encore, Homeward Bound, Graceland, The Boxer, Late in the Evening, and Sound of Silence.
Five songs in the second encore?
Six, actually.
Jeez. I mean, everything that guy's not going to have one song that you're not going to, that isn't a hit.
Do you just come for the encores, though? That's 10 songs.
Yeah.
You can just show up at like 9 and see the last.
How long's the whole show?
Well, he does 17 songs before that, and it's pretty like.
So it's got to be like a 2.5 hour show.
It's got to be, right?
Yeah.
I mean, and plus these are.
God, those are gigantic songs.
And the thing is, like, remember I told you I was supposed to go to one of those Petty shows, and I didn't go. And so this is, like, kind of the same thing. Like, he's just a guy that's playing three random dates at the Hollywood Bowl. Amazing. So it's like, you got to see him because he's not going anywhere else.
Huge. Do you have a date?
My friend Lisa, who's, like, a music person.
Wow. Well.
No, we're just friends.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
She's the one who works with that band Ghost.
Oh, she does.
And Motorhead.
Nice. That's going to be amazing. I can't wait to hear about it.
Yeah, that's
a big one.
What's the best show you've seen at the Hollywood Bowl?
The best show was ELO.
You've only seen one. That's the only one you've seen.
I saw ELO. I saw the final show of Prairie Home Companion.
Oh, right.
And I also saw Dave Koz.
Oh, the jazz guy?
The jazzy horn player.
Okay.
And it was okay. And the best part was that I was introduced to Morgan James.
Who's that?
Who did the Live Come to Papa show in New York. She was an amazing blues singer.
Oh, cool.
And she was like the first opening act while people were like coming in.
Uh-huh.
And it was like really people were still being sat. And she was just blew the place away, even in that condition, in that time of the show.
Mm-hmm.
And then I reached out to her, and she ended up coming and doing a Live Come to Papa show.
Oh, that's cool.
She was the coolest.
Yeah.
Gorgeous, too.
Yeah, that... And the one of the guys that opened, that was great for you, the... I'm blanking on his name now. The guy from Frightened Rabbit.
I know, he died.
Yeah, that was...
Do you know how he died?
No, he was just missing for a couple of days. They haven't said too much more. But that was one of the first... I think that was the first show that I did, at the one at Largo. And he's saying, you know, like, when you see a guy sing one song, you're like, oh, yeah, that guy's
so great.
Amazing.
The Frightened Rabbit is a, you know, kind of an underground band.
Definitely. I never heard of
Scottish them. Scottish folk rock band. And I love them. It was one of those that he just fell in love with their music immediately. And, and he came on to the Live Come to Pop, and he just, yeah, you're like you said, he just did two solo songs.
Just by himself, like with a guitar. And,
yeah.
And just amazing. Like Largo has so many of those, you know, like how would we even know about like Colin Hay or these, you know, these great guys? What's his name? John Bryan. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've ever seen his show. You should see that.
I opened for him once.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
So you saw him do like just the goof around Friday night?
Yeah, a little bit of it. I had to go to do a different show.
That's amazing. Like yeah. He just kind of drinks and plays every type of, like he'll play, you know, some Eagles song like Honky Tonk or just like goof around and just play different things for like a couple hours. It's yeah. Pretty crazy.
He's a genius. It sounds like that Scott Hutchinson was... very depressed.
Yeah, they kind of knew that, and then as soon as he went missing, I guess he they were worried about him.
But people should listen to that music. It's really good. All right, before we get out of here, we haven't done it in a while, and I think it's time we torture/treat our listeners to some jokes that we found because people always ask us, "Hey, you're a comedian, make me laugh. Know any jokes?" And we never do because we don't remember those kind of jokes, and this is the reason we don't memorize them. I have a bunch of one-liners.
I'll be the judge of that.
Okay. Why is Peter Pan always flying?
I don't know.
He never lands.
Ah.
My boss told me to have a good day, so I went home. I'm so good at sleeping, I can do it with my eyes closed. Nothing. I told my girlfriend she drew her eyebrows too high. She seemed surprised. Got you.
I think you should do these in front of Colin Quinn. Do these for Colin for the book event.
Today at the bank, an old lady asked me to help check her balance, so I pushed her over. I'm killing today. Why do blind people hate skydiving?
I don't know.
It scares the hell out of their dogs.
Oh.
Hee-hee. Why did the old man fall in the well?
I don't know.
Because he couldn't see that well.
Very punny.
Ooh.
There once was a street named Chuck Norris. They had to change the name because no one crosses Chuck Norris and lives.
I ate a clock yesterday. It was very time consuming.
Ugh. That's it?
My friend says to me, what rhymes with orange? I said, no, it doesn't. What doesn't rhyme with orange?
Nothing does.
What's orange and sounds like a parrot?
I don't know.
A carrot? That was a pretty good one. All right, I'm going to give you two more. What do you? Where do you find a cow with no legs?
I don't know.
Right where you left it.
You love those jokes.
I love missing limb jokes. Why do crazy people go through the forest?
I don't know.
They take... Oh, I'm sorry. How do crazy people go through the forest?
I don't know.
They take the psychopath. Those were good ones today. Woo! Kind of hurts.
You gotta see if Paul Simon's gonna tell a few of those tonight.
If you're a subscriber to Patreon, hang out. There will be another podcast coming your way. It is free June for everybody that signs up. We encourage everybody to sign up and become a subscriber. We are not charging anyone for the month of June because of technical difficulties that we've had throughout different other months. I don't want to feel guilty about it, so I'm giving everybody free month of June. So if you sign up, there'll be no charge for the month of June, and while we continue posting, and then we'll get back into trying to hire a technical person so we don't keep making our mistakes after that. Go to tompapa.com for all the book events. June 5th is the big date, and all of the live stand-up stuff that goes along with that. Go to paulisawebsite.com. Check out where Paul is going and get his get links to his new hour special and his CD and all things Paul. I will be making a formal announcement that only our people know about the Food Network show, but that will be coming toot sweet. And it's also time, we're getting closer to putting out the video of how to make a papa loaf.
Wow.
That's it, everybody. Enjoy your life.